Those who've been here before, normally we try to alternate men and ladies for the offerings. And I believe it's Adidev Prabhu and Srila Ditya are going round with the list.
Is the mic on?
So please sign up. And if you have to leave early because of other services or duties, please put an asterisk next to your name so that we can call on you earlier so that you can do what you need to do. So normally we try to remember Srila Prabhupada and remember our association with him, those of us who were fortunate to have his association. And so while the names are being collected, I just want to give a personal recollection. When I joined the temple in Vancouver, there was a prasadam room, and the prasadam room, there was this picture of Srila Prabhupada's head. It took up almost the whole wall of the prasadam room, which I thought, when I first joined, I thought this was a little extreme. You know, it was something that you see in, you know, Marxist-Leninist kind of from the 20s kind of art. And I thought, well, there's a certain sense of hyperbole about Srila Prabhupada and about his personality and his activities. And around that time, I overheard one lady, she was preaching, and she was saying how if one simply sees a pure devotee, if one simply sees Srila Prabhupada, one will automatically chant Hare Krishna. And so, of course, I took this as another example of the kind of exaggeration that people have. But a few weeks later, we went to San Francisco for Rath Yatra, and the morning after we arrived, a friend of mine asked me, he said, look, I know where Srila Prabhupada is staying, and if we go there, we'll get to see him before he goes on his morning walk. We wouldn't be able to go with him because we didn't have a vehicle, and they would drive to Golden Gate Park or someplace like that where Srila Prabhupada would have his morning walk. So anyway, we went there. We went to this place where Srila Prabhupada, this apartment where Srila Prabhupada was living outside, and we stood outside on the sidewalk waiting for Srila Prabhupada to appear. And so in due course, and there was a small group of us, and some others had also figured out this plan of greeting Srila Prabhupada. And so when Srila Prabhupada came to the gate and he opened the gate, we all paid our obeisances. And Srila Prabhupada immediately said, all glories to the assembled devotees. So automatically, of course, we all chanted, Hare Krishna. So this was the proof that actually, automatically, if you see a pure devotee, you will automatically chant Hare Krishna. So that was nice. So, and also at that time, at that Rath Yatra, by that time, in 1974, ISKCON was already an empire, and Srila Prabhupada was the emperor. There was no question about that. And so I remember at the Rath Yatra festival, we were all chanting, and there were the big three carts and three big kirtan parties in front of the carts. And all of a sudden, they said, stop the carts. And so we wonder, well, why? What's going on? Oh, Srila Prabhupada has to pass. And so Golden Gate Park, they stopped the carts. Srila Prabhupada walked into the bushes. And so that was, you know, all right. If you got to go, you got to go. And but when Srila Prabhupada emerged from the bushes, there was a devotee with this beautiful silver jug so that Prabhupada could wash his hands. I mean, who thinks of this is an emperor, you know, this doesn't happen to ordinary people, you know, you can't make this stuff up either. And so then, of course, the procession continued, and of course it was a very wonderful festival. And sometimes things happen at these festivals. I'll recount a little story of Mother Vishaka, the photographer, BBT photographer. So she was there taking pictures for this festival, and so she wanted to come on the stage to get the good close-up shots of Srila Prabhupada. And one devotee, Sannyasi, who was an important member of the society at the time, he refused to allow her to come up on the stage. You know, she was mad. But, you know, anyway, so she went around to the back of the whole crowd, and Srila Prabhupada was up on the stage. And so, because of this fortuitous occurrence of her being prevented to be on the stage, because only men would be allowed at that time, she started taking pictures. And when Srila Prabhupada got up from the Vyasasana after his talk, and the kirtan was going on, and Srila Prabhupada started dancing with his hands up in the air, and that's how the famous picture that we see of Srila Prabhupada dancing and chanting came to be. So ladies, sometimes you have to go through a few austerities, if we are focused on Srila Prabhupada and his teachings and his message, surely we will have all success. So I'd call first on Tamahara Prabhu to give the first remembrance. And after that, if Mother Mukhya could be ready.
Jaya, all glory to Srila Prabhupada. I was remembering a very nice story of Ranjit. I was also there in San Francisco in 74, and that was just so amazing when Srila Prabhupada got down off the carts and was just leaping in the air and jumping and dancing in ecstasy. We didn't see that very often with Srila Prabhupada, so that was very special. I was thinking that... of course, this is Prabhupada's disappearance day, so it's a very sort of mixed mood or mixed feeling for the devotees. In one sense, of course, it's a celebration. We know that the appearance and the disappearance of a great Vaishnava are considered to be equal, just like the rising and the setting of the sun. Krishna appears and disappears, goes to another planet to perform his pastimes. In the same way, we can understand that Srila Prabhupada, when he wound up his pastimes on earth, we don't know what he is doing, but we know that he is engaged in further pastimes serving Lord Sri Krishna in another capacity, perhaps in the spiritual world, perhaps preaching somewhere else. So we don't lament in the same way that the non-devotees lament or mourn, because we know that Srila Prabhupada is in a very, very glorious situation. And at the same time, we do lament because we feel the separation from him. Of course, it was very momentous for all of us who were there at the time when Srila Prabhupada left his body, and it was a cause of great pain and great sorrow for us. But of course, we realized as the years go by that we are never at a loss in the association of Srila Prabhupada, that his association is always there for us. And if we simply engage in service and prayer to Srila Prabhupada, he's very much with us. And devotees can always experience that, not just the direct disciples of Srila Prabhupada, but all devotees can experience that connection, that relationship with Srila Prabhupada, simply through service, through hearing his words, and getting association that way. So tell a few pastimes. I always have to remember which ones I've told before and try to come up with something a little different. It's hard sometimes over the years. One thing I was thinking about how Srila Prabhupada always presented fresh challenge to us. He was always getting us to do more, always getting us to perform at our very best. And of course, we know that Srila Prabhupada always encouraged book distribution, and tremendous amounts of books were distributed under his guidance. We know his famous marathon of the BBT, where 17 books were produced in 2 months that everyone thought was impossible. But Prabhupada made the impossible possible. Simply by his will, devotees were able to do so much. And he was always pushing in different ways. I was remembering I was in Miami in, I think, 1974 when Srila Prabhupada came, maybe in 75. I don't know if anyone remembers the year he went to Atlanta and Miami. And 75. Was that 75? Okay, that was 1975. And we had not been really distributing books, so we knew that Srila Prabhupada was coming, so the month before Prabhupada came, the temple president ordered 10,000 back to Godheads or something. So we were distributing all of these back to Godheads and like that. And, you know, so, of course, because the temple president knew that Prabhupada would ask about that. And so when Prabhupada came to the airport, one of the first things he asked was, and how are my books being distributed? And the temple president said, we've distributing 10,000 back to Godheads this month. Srila Prabhupada said, oh, and what about my big books? So you realize you could not ever put anything past Srila Prabhupada. You couldn't fool him. You couldn't try to, you know. So, in other words, you know, he was gently trying to say, yes, but are you actually doing this on a regular basis? Similar situation also. In Coconut Grove there, we were under all these banyan trees, and it's mostly coral reef there. So it's very hard to grow grass under the shade and on the coral reefs, or there isn't a lot of soil. So the backyard where Srila Prabhupada was staying was all dirt. So they decided to rake leaves. There were leaves falling all over, so at least it was covered with leaves. And of course, Srila Prabhupada gets there, he looks out the backyard, and what's the first thing he says? Why aren't you raking the leaves? They said, well, Srila Prabhupada, it's all dirt. He says, why? He said, you can't grow grass here. Srila Prabhupada looks up and down the street, sees all the neighbors' nice green yards, says, oh, your neighbors are all growing grass, why can't you? So in this way, Srila Prabhupada was always pushing us to do better. And he would be very gentle sometimes about it, but he didn't accept excuses like that. And he also wanted us to manage very carefully. He was very concerned that we attended to detail, and he demonstrated this to us. When I was in Potomac, and when Prabhupada came in 1976, the temple president had really spent a lot of money in preparation for Srila Prabhupada coming, and he actually overspent because we were in debt for practically years there trying to pay off everything. Now, he was trying to do something nice in fairness, and he wanted to fix up the place and make it really nice for Srila Prabhupada. But one thing he did was he got these very wonderful chandeliers in the temple room. I think they're still there in Potomac. Srila Prabhupada looked up at the chandeliers and said, how much do they cost? And the temple president said, $5,000, Srila Prabhupada. He says, you must be very careful how you spend Krishna's money. So again, although it was done for the deities and for Prabhupada, it was done in service, still Srila Prabhupada wanted us to be very careful in spending money. And just another thing as far as his attention to detail, I think I've said this before, but when Prabhupada was in Potomac, he looked up at one of the transformers, you know, up on the electric poles, and there was this red light blinking. And Srila Prabhupada said, why is that red light blinking? We didn't know. We said, we don't know Srila Prabhupada. And he says, you should find out. Well, of course, everybody forgot about that. I mean, you know, everything was going on, and Prabhupada was there. And so, and of course, a couple months later, we had a big Janmasthami celebration, had lights everywhere, you know, running all kinds of electricity. The transformer blew out. So Srila Prabhupada had this unique vision and this unique ability to focus on details that most of us would just ignore. And of course, obviously had a little special insight into that one. Srila Prabhupada constantly provided new and fresh insight, inspiration to us, but he was somewhat unpredictable. One thing that was really wonderful and unique about Srila Prabhupada, he was never stereotyped or, you know, never. You couldn't just say, if I ask Prabhupada this, I know he'll say this. It didn't work that way. He would always somehow change your expectations and say something in a very different way sometimes, or being very appropriate for the particular time and circumstance rather than a pat answer. In Washington, D.C., the scientists came to see Srila Prabhupada. I was in a darshan there with him, and they were presenting Srup Damodar and Sariputta and all were presenting. Srup Damodar was, before he was Maharaj, he was Brahmachari then. They were presenting the information that would later become their book, Life Comes from Life. This is one of the first things that they did with the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And so they were giving a whole presentation showing Srila Prabhupada how they were going to explain different spiritual principles so that scientists and others could understand those principles. at one point, Sri Damodar Prabhu was saying, and we can see there are differences in life and non-life, that which is material and that which is living things. They have different qualities and characteristics. He said, for instance, he just gave an example. He said, like, a stone does not have life. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, sometimes they do. Well, that set them all back a little bit. And Prabhupada explained how mountains, you know, they're the signs of life, or that they come into being, they grow, they have byproducts, etc. And he said, so mountains grow, stone, gave the example of crystals, that they grow. And they said, oh, but if you look at a stone on the street, it's not growing. He said, no, it's dead now. It had life, and now it's dead. He said, just like a tree in the forest, you know, it's alive, it falls over, and you see the dead trunk there, now the life force is gone. It was so simple the way Prabhupada explained it. You know, but it made them rethink their concepts a little bit. And they had to kind of go back to the drawing board and maybe rewrite that chapter a little bit. But a couple other quick things. Am I going too long? I'll try to make them quick. Also in D.C., it was the anniversary of the founding of ISKCON. You know, we do every year we have the founding of ISKCON. It's one of our days. I think it's in the summer, in July. And so they made a huge cake for Srila Prabhupada, and they wheeled this cake into him. And, you know, the American custom, of course, is the host or the guest of honor cuts the cake and gives the first piece. Well, that is not the custom in India, you know, at all. And you wouldn't ask your spiritual master to serve you. So they handed Srila Prabhupada the knife, and they asked him to cut the cake, and he looked a little, what is this? You know, my disciples are asking me to cut the cake. Oh. But, you know, Prabhupada always was so gracious. It went along, and finally they said, well, you know, it's like an honor to cut the cake. He said, all right. So he does, and he cuts it, and then he hands it over. He was very adaptable like that, very flexible. He would always sort of go along with whatever was the local custom and be very cooperative in that way. So that was very nice to see. Another example of his attention to detail was the previous place he had come to before D.C., apparently the toilet didn't work, was stopped up. So he wanted to be very, make sure, he says, this, are you sure? Because we had just remodeled the Holy bathroom. He said, does this toilet work? And we said, oh, everything works. It's all brand new. And I said, okay, well, give me some chapati dough. So he rolls out some chapati dough, and he tries it out, and he flushes it in the toilet. And so he was very concerned with detail. He said, all right. Of course, the next day or later that day, Prabhupada fortunately was not in the bathroom, but the glass shower door fell out and hit the ground. So he was cautioning us again about being very careful about details, which we took for granted, and he turned out to be correct, that we weren't as attentive as we thought we should be. Real nice, of course, in Miami, he's famous for saying that all of you have come because of prasadam. That was very, very nice. He turns to Abhirama, the film president, says, you have also come because of prasadam. It was quite amusing. But on the other hand, but Srila Prabhupada could be very soft like that, very funny and amusing, but he could also be very, very strict when needed. In that same, we're having these darshans outside under the banyan trees there in Miami. At one time, one young man who had just come to the temple, who was probably a little bit mentally disturbed, we had a lot of them come in those days, and some of them stayed, some of them didn't. But this one was really disturbed, as I remember, and he asked Srila Prabhupada a question in kind of a challenging way. He says, why do we have to follow the regular principles? And Srila Prabhupada said in a voice that practically literally knocked this boy back 10 feet. He said, so you will not go to hell. And, you know, he was just like completely, you know, it was very, very heavy and very, very strong, because Prabhupada knows the nature of each person and knows what they need to hear and knows how to speak to them. I think he didn't follow the principles. I believe he left. But anyway, Srila Prabhupada gave him the idea. I should probably quit at this point. I've got some more here, but we'll go on. Thank you very much. Oh, great. Srila
Prabhupada ki jai. That's Mukhya. Thank you. And after Mukhya, we'll ask Pushkar Prabhu to speak. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. So, I don't have anything really prepared, and I'm not a very good extemporaneous speaker. I always, I'm fearful of doing it for being exposed as a pretender. But I, because of not having prepared, my mind was racing for the last few days about knowing that I'm going to have to say something. And I was thinking how, you know, it's so important that every disciple and every devotee can say something about Srila Prabhupada. When I was in Chennai, I was greeting the deities, and around 11 o'clock, and their feast starts at 12, and I was just looking at the deities, actually having darshan. And the temple president came over and said, I want you to speak to the crowd today. You know, right then, I had to sit down, and there was 500 Indians there. And I remembered how Prabhupada did that sometimes, you know, with his few disciples that he took to India, and like there was 10,000 people out in the pandal, and he made someone sit down and speak about Krishna consciousness. And I thought, well, at least I can just speak about Prabhupada. That's a lot easier. That's really right from the heart. I don't have to expose my lack of scholarship. So, you know, so I was able to do it, and it was really wonderful to talk about Prabhupada's coming to America and the way it was Holy Name Week, so I was able to speak about the way Srila Prabhupada used the Holy Name to make all of us devotees just by sitting down under a tree in a park and chanting. And then so many people came, and it you know, snowballed from there. But I was thinking about this particular day. It's kind of a sad day. I don't really like thinking about, you know, Prabhupada's passing away, and you know, how he looked on his bed and all the stress of all the devotees were under at that time, wondering what was going to happen next. And I was thinking about how at this point in our lives, my friends are losing people in their lives. Their parents are dying, and sometimes their spouses are dying. And it's just that time of life where we really face that. And I was thinking about how, you know, with those relationships, as people die and the years move on, the memories fade a little bit, the attachment fades, the relationship kind of recedes a bit into the background. But with Srila Prabhupada, this is 39 years, I think, that he passed away, and it's got stronger. This relationship grows, it develops, it gets deeper, you know, through service and prayer, our relationship grows more and more with Srila Prabhupada. And I think all devotees experience that, no matter who they are. You know, having this wonderful murti of Srila Prabhupada in every temple room in ISKCON is such a great blessing, because Prabhupada is right there, and the minute you see him, you experience that. And then by praying to him, you know, in the course of your service, your relationship really, really can blossom and develop with him. I was thinking how in families, you know, parents have more than one child, so that the brothers and the sisters will have each other when the parents are gone. And those are very sweet relationships, because nobody knows you like your brother or your sister. And nobody knows your parents like your brothers and your sister and you. So it's a really special thing to have that sibling relationship. And Prabhupada left us such a big family. Somebody was asking me, a new devotee said, did I take a Shiksha Guru after Srila Prabhupada left? And I said, no, my relationship with Prabhupada is stronger than ever. But I thought, actually, all of the devotees are like Shiksha Gurus to me. I'm always learning so much every day from everybody in my life. And it's that family connection, and that wonderful, one of the wonderful special things that Prabhupada did was to give us these temples and this association. And there are devotees, you know, we're connected with. Some live in our temple, some live near our temple, some live far from our temple, and we only see them occasionally. Same connection, Prabhupada in the center, Krishna in the center. Such a great gift that he gave to all of us, this association. And we learn what we need to learn from him through the devotees. I have developing relationships with the merchants in Loy Bazaar. This is my fourth year shopping there, so you know, you start to get connections. And also, many of these people, these men, their fathers were the people that we bought from in the 70s. So they, you know, I knew their parents before I knew them. And it's amazing to see how much they have grown in Krishna consciousness and appreciate Srila Prabhupada. They're such special people, the Brijvasis. I was reading something where when Prabhupada first came to Vrindavan with a few devotees, and he was giving Nectar of Devotion classes, and he said he'd give in English because he wanted his disciples to understand. Still, all these bridge bossies came, just they couldn't understand anything he said, but they wanted to be in the association of a saintly person, and the fact that they couldn't understand the language was, did it matter? These are very, very special devotees there. So I mentioned this one morning when I made announcements. There's one family, they have a clothing business, and I know that the father started out selling gumshoes. That's it. He had a few gumshoes on the, you know, this was many, many years ago. Now he has a five-story store. They're trying to make it like Macy's, literally where those things where you, you know, you have a gun and it reads the code and everything. In Vrindavan, they're doing this. So he's building more stories, and we were saying to him, like, you know, what do you, it's amazing what you have here. And Sundamini said, you should put a little photograph on the wall of what it looked like when you first started, and then a photograph of what it looks like today. And I said, you could write under it, thank you, Srila Prabhupada. And I was being a little cynical because I thought, you know, these people are becoming multimillionaires thanks to the poor, poverty-stricken devotees who come there every year and buy some cloth and stuff. So he said to me immediately, yes, I was just talking to my son last night. We were appreciating so much how Prabhupada has saved Vaishnava culture. So he didn't get my cynicism, which was fortunate, because this just shows you the difference of how I think and how a bridge bossy thinks. They were just appreciating. The fact is that Prabhupada really did. He has saved Vaishnava culture. It was fading away. And in fact, this was years ago, one of the original members of Ganga Prasad's store, the father, he was speaking to a friend of mine, and there was a marriage going to happen between one of the merchant's sons and one of the ISKCON devotees' daughters. So he said to her, what is she thinking? Why is she allowing this marriage with, you know, talking about ISKCON with this boy? And, oh, I don't know what's happening. You know, they were distressed that the ISKCON was going to go with this merchant's son. And then he said, actually, they talked about it. And he said, you know, I think it's a good thing, because ISKCON will put back into Vrindavan the pure essence of Vaishnavism. And so it's good if they breed together, I guess he was saying. You know, they really could appreciate the essence of Prabhupada's movement. And now, Kunti Mala sellers and the Mirtiwala sellers, they have like a little Bhagavad Gita study group together. They read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and they think about it. You know, these are younger men, younger than me, and it's really fantastic to see. I was just trying to think of a pastime, because I didn't have so much personal association with Prabhupada. Mostly I would be like in the same place at the same time, but like really not much interaction between the two of us. But there was a story that I always really liked, and this is when the Bombay temple was just first being developed, and Srila Prabhupada was meeting many of the Indian people in Bombay and getting to know them. And there was a couple that came to see him, a man and a wife, and they sat opposite him on on the floor opposite his low seat. And the man kind of challenged Prabhupada, and he said, why are you making another temple? There are so many temples already in India. So Prabhupada just very peacefully said to him, are you married? And the man was like shocked, because he's sitting next to his wife. He said, yes, this is my wife. Prabhupada said, do you have any children? He said, yes, we have a son and a daughter. He said, well, just like you want to have children, there are already so many children in India, you could adopt children. There's many, many children here. In the same way, the devotee wants to do something special for Krishna. They want to do something unique for Krishna. And that's, you know, he was explaining like that. So I thought, I love that, because I thought each one of us, you know, we do something special for Krishna. We've done something special for Krishna in our lives. You know, we're running the series in our newsletter, interviewing Prabhupada disciples, and we want to interview every single person here eventually. Because if you read the history of every devotee, you'll see these amazing things these individuals have done over the years out of love for Prabhupada. And so may we all continue to always do something special for Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Namaskar to you. And to be followed by Mother Vrindavaneshwari.
Haribo. Jaya Nilo Premadana, Karuna Prabhupada. Heino Prabhu Kota Gelo Acharya Thakur. But today we should be meditating on separation of Prabhupada. I happen to have been there for the whole time that Prabhupada was sick and leaving the planet. So I could talk for a long time, but you boil it down to. So in February, March, I was at the festival and Prabhupada got sick. He stopped talking in the class. But then I started doing a big painting about maybe 4.5 feet tall. And from a photo, and actually it became a little famous because this picture of the original gurus are all standing around the painting after Prabhupada left. I was sitting in the old BBT room and Prabhupada looked very stern like this, and he's sitting on this wooden asana. So I had that asana out on the, I was painting right outside Prabhupada's room and I taking some photograph, and I was using the asana. So I had a chance to go a couple times and talk to Prabhupada about the painting and in general painting. So when I finished it, I presented it to him. And so he was looking and he said, like that. And he had no complaint. He said, this is very good, big, big painting. You should do big, big painting and give it to the big, big members. He wanted me to do, me or anyone, to do big paintings and give it to them so they think of Prabhupada, actually. He didn't say that part, but obviously if you got a big painting of Prabhupada and you're like that size, you know, you're going to be thinking of. But of course it got kept for the temple, and that didn't happen exactly. It didn't play out. But meanwhile, he said, if you continue to paint in disciplic succession, then you will go back to Godhead. I said, well, can't beat that. It's pretty easy. I can do that. Yes. It's like, can you crawl across the floor or something? Yeah, can do that. So then Prabhupada went up to Vrindavan, and I stayed there to finish the painting. And then I had my ticket, the plane ticket. And Tamal, the Krishna Maharaj, he said, somehow or other, he is a little bit prescient, or I guess the word is. He said, I will call you, I think, you know. So then in April, May, there was a telegram. Someone said, oh, Tamal sent you a telegram. He said, you must come immediately to Vrindavan and work on this project. The project was that the fifth canto, there was a committee of devotees with Tamal Krishna heading it up, which is Yasodhanandan, who was Swami then, another guy named Bhakti Prem Swami, and needed an artist to somehow clarify the fifth canto, how does the universe look? And I'm supposed to do the drawing. So I went up there and started working with them. Quite an adventure. We had giant pieces of paper that were taped together with huge concentric circles of Bhumandala and Mount Sumeru, and so maybe once or twice a week, we'd go in and present these. Like, two or three of us would have to hold his papers 8-10 foot, and probably would look and we'd explain. Because previously, when they'd done the fifth canto, it wasn't very clear. It was like some kind of a gradations, and they wanted, probably said that we need to fix this problem. And there were so many things that occurred during that time, just like, they were searching for a pundit to help them understand. Prabhupada said, I was a layman. I didn't understand this structure of the universe. So when this Bhakti Prem Swami, his name was actually originally Prem Swami, or Yogi Prem Yogi. Then suddenly he got sannyas, along with Bhakti Charu and another Indian devotee, three of them. That was the last sannyas initiation. And he got sannyas, he got first and second all at one time. Bingo. Only person like that. But because he was very learned in Puranas, and he could bluff whatever he didn't know, Do you remember him? Ranjit remembers. Anyway, he was a real character, super duper. An ace, number one, interesting fellow. So, you know, different things. Like when he first, we understood that Mount Sumeru was shaped like this, and conical but smaller on the bottom. He was describing the Lokapala, different devas. They have their abodes on top of this Mount Sumeru. And Brahmaji has his one abode there, and then surrounded by the eight. So he said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada. He was a little like, if you think of Maharishi, he giggled sometimes. And he had a real profile to be that type of person. And he said, it is like that, he said. It is summer home for Brahmaji. And Prabhupada said, yes, why not? If ordinary man can have summer home, why not Brahmaji? Why not Brahma, big demigod like that? Prabhupada would always agree whatever he would say with these things, you know. Actually, at one point, I said, I think I was in the room alone. Everyone had left. I said, Prabhupada, we can't see Mount Sumeru. It's 800,000 miles, something. I can't remember even. We can't see that. It must be subtle. And Prabhupada said, yes, subtle. It's subtle. So gradually that project wound down, and then I decided I would, the famous story, I decided I would stay on the balcony of the Krishna Balaram, and I would paint some of the trees there. Oh, spiritual trees, let me just paint those trees. There was no Krishna, you know, that I was painting. I was just painting these trees. So after about a week or two, I was thinking, this is Maya, I should put Krishna in this painting, you know, the nonsense. So I put Krishna in there, and couple of cowherd boys, and I kept telling Tamal Krishna, I said, like, well, I wanted to show Prabhupada this painting, I had to show him this painting. So one day he said, okay, Prabhupada's there, come on in. So I put the painting down, and Prabhupada looked, and he kept looking. He didn't say anything. It was the longest silence that I could ever remember in the universe. But Prabhupada just looking at this painting, didn't say anything. Usually always Prabhupada says something like that, or whatever, you know. He didn't say anything. Finally, he said, what is the idea? What is the idea? And I said, well, Prabhupada is Krishna and coward boys. And he said, but where is it in the book? So I said, well, Nectar Devotion. I didn't have a shloka or anything, you know. Immediately then he said, what shloka is it? I didn't say anything. And then I said, I was so super clever that I said, probably Krishna is unlimited. Don't try to trick Prabhupada. If somehow you get a chance, just avoid it. If you think you had a chance to trick him, you know. He said, Krishna is unlimited. You are limited. Stick to the book. So then I just wanted to, I knew I was convicted, but I didn't know what my sentence was, more or less. So I said, well, Prabhupada, could this picture ever be used? And he went, like something. He didn't say, why not? Or he didn't say, no, get out of here. But either. So then the painting had disappeared for years, and I saw that Manu Kanya had it in her house or somewhere. And the maps disappeared. They were rolled up somewhere and never seen again. But all the ideas of the maps are there in Sadaputa's work and other Bhaktivedanta scholars. Anyway, it's a very grave time. And one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, Krishnadas Babaji, several times he would come to see Prabhupada. I was in the room at least one time when he came. Now, I have to understand the room was light, it was dark, mostly dark, the whole time. And it was very, very somber. You know, people were chanting, bardrosh would chant. At one point, they brought these Mayapur band. It was Swetavaraha, Murari Hari, and Sarvagya. And they were expert singers, especially Sarvagya. He had his fantastic voice, like opera, but fantastic. I don't know, anyone here remember Sarvagya? Those days are over. He sang so good. Anyway, so they brought them from Mayapur to sing for Prabhupada. So then I found out after they sang for some time, maybe half hour, hour, a few times, and Prabhupada said, no, they are too professional. I would rather hear Bharadraja and Hansa Duda. He wanted to hear the old Vaisara. He said he wanted to hear the old devotees. So, you know, they went back to Mayapur. And different things would happen. So when Krishnas Babaji, he would come. I remember I was one time there, and Prabhupada was very weak. And he said, where is Babaji Maharaj? And immediately, you know, Bhakti Chiru went out. He got on a rickshaw, and he was hightailing it, as they say, down the road. He found him. I think he usually would stay down at one of Prabhupada Gaurav Madhav Maharaj's mats near the railway track trains, and he would came back. As soon as he came in, the whole atmosphere, just a few of us who remember Krishna's Babaji, it was just like someone out of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So when he came in, you know, Prabhupada was very enlightened, and he started to sing, and it's amazing. And there was one very grave day, several days before Prabhupada disappeared, and I didn't know. I knew that Narayan Maharaj had come to speak, and others were coming. So I was staying up in this restaurant. There was a restaurant in those days. You could look right over where Prabhupada's entrance was at the Krishna Balaram. So a couple of flatbed rickshaws came with big sacks of burlap. So I said to Yasodhanandan or something, I said, what's this? He said, oh, those are the, I'm not sure if it was Yasodhanandan, it was somebody who knew more than me. Those are sacks, they're full of salt for the samadhi. Because they already started to lay out the samadhi in front from where it is now. And Prabhupada is still there. I don't know if everyone knows this, but it's happened. So whoever Yasodhanandan or something said to that. And I was so shocking that the sacks were the salt and the samadhi was being laid out and Prabhupada is still lying there, you know. And for me, it was almost like Prabhupada disappeared already that day, you know, because I could understand a done deal. It was not, you know, although one time I went to bribe guys at the police or whatever they are, the immigration in Mathura, and I was walking down back to take the bus, and then I got a tap on the back of my shoulder, and I turned around, it was Krishna's Babaji, and he had a black umbrella. And he said, how is your Prabhupada? If anyone ever saw Krishna's Babaji, it was right out of Chaitanya Charitamrita, exact, well, not that Prabhupada wasn't yet a completely other, but just Krishna's Babaji was always crying and laughing and in some ecstasy, you know. So he said, how is your Prabhupada? And that particular morning, the Kaviraj had said, oh, that Prabhupada's pulse was better, he was a little improved or something. So I told him, I said, well, the Kaviraj said he was improved. And he went, Krishna's mercy. And he started dancing, dancing around. Very memorable thing that happened that time. So anyway, there's more, but other people have to speak. One time during the... And probably before he got too sick, he used to go into the courtyard and sit under the tamal tree. And mostly was this Bengali devotee who sang very sweetly, Sachidananda Das. He was a brahmachari. He'd previously been with Ramakrishna or something. But he told me that his grandmother was a close associate of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he used to sing these, you can hear Temple of the Mind, Amidamune Puline. And his timing was a little off. He wasn't like a professional, but his voice was so sweet, and Prabhupada would love to hear. So he would sing every day, and Prabhupada would listen. Sometime the Gurukula boy, there was one boy, Maitreya or Keshava, he was super expert, he used to sing. Anyway, he would sing generally. So one day he wasn't singing, but another devotee who now passed away, Prabhupada disciple, he was sitting and singing. And I was sitting next to Prabhupada at the tamal, right behind them. And Prabhupada was very weak at that time, of course, and he leaned over to Prabhupada, Prabhupada leaned over to Tamal Krishna, and he said, where is Sachidananda? In a weak voice, out in the... So somebody ran upstairs, apparently he was taking a nap or something, they got him down, and that guy was replaced. The Prabhupada had definite opinions, and, you know, there is the idea that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had certain people sing, they couldn't sing, it all stems because when he was leaving his body, Sridhar Maharaj sang. But generally speaking, when Prabhupada would come somewhere, he would ask for, Bhardwaj or Vishnu John, someone who could sing, would sing. It wasn't like someone would croak. And he liked to hear that Satchitananda sing, Krishna's Bhavati. He wanted to hear Bhardwaj. He had definite opinions. He wanted to hear Hansa Duda. So, maybe later I can.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Mother Vrindavaneshwari. And after her, Trivikram Prabhu. He has to leave early, so. Is Trivikram Prabhu still here? Okay, very good. Next.
So I was reflecting this morning about Prabhupada's disappearance and how Prabhupada is actually our eternal father. And I was thinking when I first joined the temple, which was in New Dork in February 72, which was a very, very, very ecstatic happening time. There was devotees joining right and left, and Prabhupada spent a lot of time there, so it was a very, you felt Prabhupada's presence. So I know within the first 2 weeks of being there, every day, all day, I was being told, all the lessons of life, of a new birth, like when someone is, a child is born, they're taught how to eat, how to sleep, how to dress, how to bathe. So all day long, as soon as you come in, just clip your nails. Okay, you wear your hair this way. You dress in this clothing. You go to the bathroom like this. You eat Krishna prasadam. You don't touch your hands, to your mouth. You use your right hand. You wear this clothing. We dance this way in the temple. And always they were saying, and Prabhupada said we do it like this, and Prabhupada said we do it like that. So we became very attached. The Prabhupada was our guide and our father, and these are all the sisters and brothers giving us some good training, and it was a rebirth. So I was reflecting like that, and just thinking how Prabhupada is our eternal father, and he's told us how to live in every aspect of our life. He also gave some very simple, sweet things he'd said. That he said, this process is so easy, even a child can take to it. So I had a very practical experience when I was just returning from India. It was July of 76. I was with my husband and my son, Parham, who was only 11 months old then. And excuse me. And we didn't know it at the time, but we landed in New York and we found out that Prabhupada was there, and it was just a few days away from the first Rath Yatra there was taking place in New York. So it was the first time that my son was going to get to see Prabhupada. So there we were in the temple room for Guru Puja. And I was holding his hands, and he was always like to jump up and down, so he was dancing, like you're holding his hands, and he's springing off the floor dancing. And Prabhupada would be looking at the children, and he was always encouraging. He'd use his hands, and he'd motion to dance more. And so then it was time to go get the sweet prasadam that he would be giving to all the children. So I was carrying him up, and Parham was a baby. He reached forward, and the prasadam they were giving out was big pieces, very big pieces of burfi. Now, the thing that was very, very unusual and extremely out of character, and something my son had never, ever done, in the past when you'd give him prasadam, the first thing he did was he held out his hand and tried to feed me. He would never eat it first. He always tried to put it in my mouth. He didn't do that. And the other thing is, he never ate sweets. He He didn't eat sweets. And he didn't offer me the sweet. He took a bite of it, and he kept eating it and eating it, and he ate the whole thing. And he never, you know, it was very, very unusual, and I was shocked and amazed because I was thinking how here this infant who was 11 months old felt the potency of Srila Prabhupada. Because he did something completely out of character. So there's, you know, so many sweet, wonderful remembrances. Just, I was in New Dwarka in the early 70s when Prabhupada came for 2 months, and every day, you know, he would take his walk in the morning, and he never wore a watch, but he always told the devotees, now it's time to go back. And when he came back, he walked in, and it was exactly to the second, the time that the conch was to blow, the time that the curtains were to open. How did he do that? And then he'd come in, and he just kind of floated down to the where the altar was. Barely couldn't see his feet touching the ground. And, you know, very, very graceful. And then I was once standing just maybe 2 feet away from him when he was taking the Charanamrita, and Prabhupada had a Charanamrita in his hand, and he took it, and he made this very sweet, boyish expression, and he says, this is so nice, I could eat it all day. So he said so many sweet things. And we were talking about how learning how to eat and how to drink. So Prabhupada, I don't know if anybody, I'm sure anybody who was in his presence saw this, but all the time when he was on the Vyasa sign, he was given a cup of water. And sometime during the class, he would take that water. He held the cup up at least 1.5 feet high, at least. And he went like this, and he poured it, and this perfect stream came down into his mouth, and it just poured down his throat. It was incredible to watch. I loved watching that every day. It was very magical. And when Prabhupada would eat prasadam, he would pick it up, formed a little tiny piece, and go like this. He sprang it from his hands, not a couple feet away, and it perfectly went into his mouth. There was never any mess, never fell. How did that happen? You know, Prabhupada was just the simplest, amazing things. He was so perfect at, and he did things that we would just take for granted as eating and taking a drink. It was very, very, very astounding. I was ending with a story of a godbrother's mine, which I thought was very enlivening and amusing for people that know Nara Narayan. Nara Narayan was rather boisterous, eccentric, theatrical personality, a very big personality, had a very deep, resonant voice. And he was told this story that he wanted to ask Prabhupada if everybody else could be pure like him. And so he was waiting at the door, and he knocked on the door, and Prabhupada says, come in. And he came in the room, and then he was starting to get very nervous, and he's wringing his hands, and he's thinking, oh, what am I doing? I shouldn't be in here. And Prabhupada is just walking back and forth. He said, creating this wonderful, wonderful atmosphere that Prabhupada created. It was his own world. He was chanting japa, and he was just walking back and forth in the room. And after a moment or so, Prabhupada said, yes. And so he said, Prabhupada, I just want to know, is it possible? Can the devotees ever be like you? Can we ever be pure like you? So he said, Prabhupada didn't answer, and he continued chanting japa, and he kept walking back and forth. Then after a couple moments go by, he walks by him, and with Prabhupada, with a twinkle in his eye, he looks at him, he goes, why not? And he continued on, and Nara Narayan said, I just melted into a puddle of ghee. So Prabhupada gave us the chance for eternal bliss and knowledge. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna. It's Trivikram Prabhu here. Yeah? After Trivikram, some people have to